once stayed in a forest monastery that was half a mile from a village. One night the villagers were celebrating with a loud party as I was doing walking meditation. It must have been after 11 p.m. and I was feeling a bit peculiar. I'd been feeling strange like this since midday. My mind was quiet. There were hardly any thoughts. I felt very relaxed and at ease. I did walking meditation until I was tired and then went to sit in my grass-roofed hut. As I sat down, I barely had time to cross my legs before, amazingly, my mind just wanted to delve into a profound state of peace. It happened all by itself. As soon as I sat down, the mind became truly peaceful. It was rock solid. It wasn't as if I couldn't hear the noise of the villagers singing and dancing. I still could. But I could also shut the sound out entirely. Strange. When I didn't pay attention to the sound, it was perfectly quiet. Didn't hear a thing. But if I wanted to hear, I could, without it being a disturbance. It was like there were two objects in my mind that were placed side by side, but not touching. I could see that the mind and its object of awareness were separate and distinct. Just like this spittoon and water kettle here. Then I understood. When the mind unifies in samadhi, if you direct your attention outward, you can hear. But if you let it dwell in its emptiness, then it's perfectly silent. When sound was perceived, I could see that the knowing and the sound were distinctly different. I contemplated. If this isn't the way it is, how else could it be? That's the way it was. These two things were totally separate. I continued on investigating like this until my understanding deepened even further. Ah, this is important. When the perceived continuity of phenomena is cut, the result is peace. The previous illusion of continuity transformed into peace of mind. So I continued to sit, putting effort into the meditation. The mind at that time was focused solely on the meditation, indifferent to everything else. Had I stopped meditating at this point, it would have been merely because it was complete. I could have taken it easy, but it wouldn't have been because of laziness, tiredness, or feeling annoyed. Not at all. These were absent from the heart. There was only perfect inner balance and equipoise just right. Eventually, I did take a break, but it was only the posture of sitting that changed. My heart remained constant, unwavering, and unflagging. I pulled a pillow over, intending to take a rest. As I reclined, the mind remained just as peaceful as it had been before. Then, just before my head hit the pillow, the mind's awareness began flowing inwards. I didn't know where it was headed, but it kept flowing deeper and deeper within. It was like a current of electricity flowing down a cable to a switch. When it hit the switch, my body exploded with a deafening bang. The knowing during that time was extremely lucid and subtle. Once past that point, the mind was released to penetrate deeply inside. It went inside to the point where there wasn't anything at all. Absolutely nothing from the outside world could come into that place. Nothing at all could reach it. Having dwelt internally for some time, the mind then retreated to flow back out. However, when I say it retreated, I don't mean to imply that I made it flow back out. I was simply an observer, only knowing and witnessing. The mind came out more and more until it finally returned to normal. Once my normal state of consciousness returned, the question arose, what was that? The answer came immediately. These things happen of their own accord. You don't have to search for an explanation. This answer was enough to satisfy my mind. After a short time, my mind again began flowing inwards. I wasn't making any conscious effort to direct the mind. It took off by itself. As it moved deeper and deeper inside, it again hit that same switch. This time, my body shattered into the most minute particles and fragments. Again, the mind was released to penetrate deeply inside itself. Utter silence. It was even more profound than the first time. Absolutely nothing external could reach it. The mind abided here for some time, for as long as it wished, and then retreated to flow outwards. At that time, it was following its own momentum and happening all by itself. I wasn't influencing or directing my mind to be in any particular way, to flow inwards or retreat outwards. I was merely the one knowing and watching. My mind again returned to its normal state of consciousness, and I didn't wonder or speculate about what was happening. As I meditated, the mind once again inclined inwards. This time, the entire cosmos shattered and disintegrated into minute particles. The earth, ground, mountains, fields and forests, the whole world disintegrated into the space element. People had vanished. Everything had disappeared. On this third time, absolutely nothing remained. The mind, having inclined inwards, settled down there for as long as it wished. I can't say I understand exactly how it remained there. It's difficult to describe what happened. There's nothing I can compare it to. No simile is apt. This time, the mind remained inside far longer than it had previously, and only after some time did it come out of that state. When I say it came out, I don't mean to imply that I made it come out, or that I was controlling what was happening. The mind did it all by itself. I was merely an observer. Eventually, it again returned to its normal state of consciousness. How could you put a name on what happened during these three times? Who knows? What term are you going to use to label it? Everything I've been relating to you concerns the mind following the way of nature. This was no theoretical description of the mind or psychological states. There's no need for that. When there's faith or confidence, you get in there and really do it. Not just playing around. You would put your life on the line. And when your practice reaches the stage that I've been describing, afterwards the whole world is turned upside down. Your understanding of reality is completely different. Your view is utterly transformed. If someone saw you at that moment, they might think you were insane. If this experience happened to someone who didn't have a thorough grip on themselves, they might actually go crazy, because nothing is the same as it was before. The people of the world appear differently than they used to. But you're the only one who sees this. Absolutely everything changes. Your thoughts are transmuted. Other people now think in one way, while you think in another. They speak about things in one way, while you speak in another. You're no longer the same as other human beings. This way of experiencing things doesn't deteriorate. It persists and carries on. Give it a try. If it really is as I describe, you won't have to go searching very far. Just look into your own heart. This heart is staunchly courageous, unshakably bold. This is the heart's power, its source of strength and energy. The heart has this potential strength. This is the power and force of samadhi. At this point, it's still just the power and purity that the mind derives from samadhi. This level of samadhi is samadhi at its ultimate. The mind has attained the summit of samadhi. It's not mere momentary concentration. If you were to switch to Vipassana meditation at this point, the contemplation would be uninterrupted and insightful. Or you could take that focused energy and use it in other ways. From this point on, you could develop psychic powers, perform miraculous feats, or use it any way you wanted. Ascetics and hermits have used samadhi energy for making holy water, talismans, or casting spells. These things are all possible at this stage, and may be of some benefit in their own way. But it's like the benefit of alcohol. You drink it, and then you get drunk. This level of samadhi is a rest stop. The Buddha stopped and rested here. It forms the foundation for contemplation and vipassana. However, it's not necessary to have such profound samadhi as this in order to observe the conditions around us. So keep on steadily contemplating the process of cause and effect. To do this, we focus the peace and clarity of our minds to analyze the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, physical sensations, thoughts, and mental states we experience. Examine moods and emotions, whether positive or negative, happy or unhappy. Examine everything. Everything experienced with a peaceful mind confers greater understanding. No longer do we create proliferating interpretations around what is experienced. Wealth, fame, blame, praise, happiness, and unhappiness come of their own accord. And we're at peace. We're wise. It's actually fun. It becomes fun to sift through and sort out these things. What other people call good, bad, evil, here, there, happiness, unhappiness, or whatever. It all gets taken in for our own profit. When we begin to wield the peace and serenity we've been developing in meditation to contemplate these things, wisdom arises. This is what I call wisdom. This is Vipassana. It's not something fabricated and construed. If we're wise, Vipassana will develop naturally. We don't have to label what's happening. If there's only a little clarity of insight, we call this little Vipassana. When clear seeing increases a bit, we call that moderate Vipassana. If knowing is fully in accordance with the truth, we call that ultimate Vipassana. Personally, I prefer to use the word wisdom, punya, rather than Vipassana. If we think we are going to sit down from time to time and practice Vipassana meditation, we're going to have a very difficult time of it. Insight has to proceed from peace and tranquility. The entire process will happen naturally, of its own accord. We can't force it. The Buddha taught that this process matures at its own rate. Having reached this level of practice, we allow it to develop according to our innate capabilities, spiritual aptitude, and the merit we've accumulated in the past. But we never stop putting effort into the practice. Whether the progress is swift or slow is out of our control. It's just like planting a tree. The tree knows how fast it should grow. If we want it to grow more quickly than it is, this is pure delusion. If we want it to grow more slowly, recognize this as delusion as well. If we do the work, the results will be forthcoming, just like planting a tree. For example, say we wanted to plant a chili bush. Our responsibility is to dig a hole, plant the seedling, water it, fertilize it, and protect it from insects. This is our job, our end of the bargain. This is where faith then comes in. Whether the chili plant grows or not is up to it. It's not our business. We can't go tugging on the plant, trying to stretch it and make it grow faster. That's not how nature works. Our responsibility is to water and fertilize it. Practicing Dharma in the same way puts our hearts at ease. If we realize enlightenment in this lifetime, that's fine. If we have to wait until our next life, no matter. We have faith and unfaltering conviction in the Dharma. Whether we progress quickly or slowly is up to our innate capabilities, spiritual aptitude, and the merit we've accumulated so far. Practicing like this puts the heart at ease. It's like we're riding in a horse cart. We don't put the cart before the horse. Or it's just like trying to plow a rice paddy while walking in front of our water buffalo, rather than behind. What I'm saying here is that the mind is getting ahead of itself. It's impatient to get quick results. That's not the way to do it. Don't walk in front of your water buffalo. You have to walk behind the water buffalo. It's just like that chili plant we are nurturing. Give it water and fertilizer, and it will do the job of absorbing the nutrients. When ants or termites come to infest it, we chase them away. Doing just this much is enough for the chili to grow beautifully on its own. And once it's growing beautifully, don't try to force it to flower when we think it should flower. It's none of our business. It will just create useless suffering. Allow it to bloom on its own. And once the flowers do bloom, don't demand that it immediately produce chili peppers. Don't rely on coercion. That really causes suffering. Once we figure this out, we understand what our responsibilities are and are not. Each has their specific duty to fulfill. The mind knows its role in the work to be done. If the mind doesn't understand its role, it will try to force the chili plant to produce peppers on the very day we plant it. The mind will insist that it grow, flower, and produce peppers all in one day. This is nothing but the second noble truth. Craving causes suffering to arise. If we are aware of this truth and ponder it, we'll understand that trying to force results in our Dharma practice is pure delusion. It's wrong. Understanding how it works, we let go and allow things to mature according to our innate capabilities, spiritual aptitude, and the merit we've accumulated. We keep doing our part. Don't worry that it might take a long time. Even if it takes 100 or 1,000 lifetimes to get enlightened, so what? however many lifetimes it takes, we just keep practicing with a heart at ease, comfortable with our pace. Once our mind has entered the stream, there's nothing to fear. It will have gone beyond even the smallest evil action. The Buddha said that the mind of a Sotapanna, a stream enterer, someone who has attained the first stage of enlightenment, has entered the stream of Dharma that flows to enlightenment. Once you're in the stream, you know what your responsibilities are. You comprehend the work ahead. You understand how to practice Dharma. You know when to strive hard and when to relax. You comprehend your body and mind, this physical and mental process. And you renounce the things that should be renounced, continually abandoning without a shred of doubt.